Crib Notes, things parents Google at 3 a.m.
Don't forget, what's discussed today is the opinions of the individuals and not the organisations they work for.
And while we hope you find this podcast helpful, remember, this is not personal medical advice. If you are concerned, do speak to a professional.
Hello and welcome back to Crib Notes, the podcast answering the questions parents Google at 3 a.m. with me, dad-to-be Rick Kelsey, and paediatric doctor and new mum Sarah Blackstock. Today, we welcome back Dr. Max Davey, consultant paediatrician and Royal College of Paediatrics Head of Health Promotion. What a title that is! Talking about how to support your young child's development. Sarah.
So thanks so much for joining us, Max. So just as a background, Max is a consultant paediatrician, and what he doesn't know about child development, no one will know. So thank you so much for joining
that's
us.
True. That's
no one in the world.
No one.
Literally no one.
One of the things that lots of mums are asking us about is how they can support their child's development. Hopefully we can be nice and reassuring today. But it's also a slightly hot topic in the medical world as well, that people are now talking about the first 1,000 days. So when we say the first 1,000 days, we're talking about from conception to the first 2 years of life. There's lots of information out there about how the brain is rapidly developing at this time. Mm-hmm. And because of this, we've got this window of opportunity for child development and child health. Do you think that these first 1,000 days do determine the rest of your life? Do we have
No,
have
I don't.
Time?
Is that
I
why
really
we're all
don't.
Here now?
I really don't.
Because of those first 1,000 days.
Exactly. I really don't. I think the first 1,000 days movement and the whole emphasis on the, you know, the central importance of very early development is well-intentioned. But I think ultimately it overreaches the evidence. I think it comes from the fact that in the health and social care system in the UK, and I think other countries, we're all about treatment. We're not about prevention. And it comes from an insight that, yes, that's true for physical illness, but it should also be true for child development and mental health and behavioural problems. So early intervention is in theory, going to be better than later intervention. Now, there's two problems with translating that into this kind of simplistic statement that the first 3 years are everything. One is the first 3 years, you don't suddenly stop your brain rapidly developing. The brain is rapidly developing up until about the age of 25. And it's only sort of my age that it starts to go rapidly downhill.
Still working fine. Well, still working fine, Max.
Well, I'm running on autopilot. So that's the first problem with it. And the second problem is they're confusing early intervention with intervention in the first 3 years. Early intervention can be at any time. It's the intervention in a process which is going to lead to a problem. It doesn't have to be in that first 3 years. And I suppose just to add a little bonus problem with that, actually the evidence that early intervention is definitely better than later intervention isn't great either.
Really?
No. It certainly improves quality of life for the children and for the family to have early intervention so that the world makes sense to a child with developmental problems. But that's quite different to it making a massive difference down the line.
To the outcomes. Mm.
Of course, a lot of, you know, new mums and dads just say that the newborn just sleeps, feeds, then has a nappy change and, of course, repeats.
Yeah.
Should people be doing other things with them?
Well, I read this question in advance and I thought, well, that's kind of what babies are for, isn't it?
Aren't we good giving you your questions in advance?
Very nice. And I thought, yes, they are. Their main job is to grow. Their main job is to get much, much bigger in a year. And that takes up most of their time. There are always little opportunities, like when you're changing a nappy, to do a little bit of interaction. But if the kid then wants to have a feed and then wants to go out to sleep, that's okay. That's what they want to do. Their main job is to get bigger so that they, you know, can start making trouble.
Different children have different personalities, don't they?
They do, yeah.
But essentially, new babies still, they are learning from the environment all the time. They can hear what you're saying to them and they do benefit from you talking to them, don't they?
They do. But I think it's very difficult to sort of say there's a minimum amount of words that a child should hear. I think it's about having an environment where talking is normal, where people talk and where people interact. And it doesn't matter beyond that what you do within that. It's if you have an interactive environment which is full of, you know, people coming in and out and talking, then your kid will probably be as good as they're going to be.
So we're talking about child development. What would you expect at what age? So when we come to rolling, sitting, crawling, walking, smiling, babbling, should we expect things at certain ages?
There are ranges around which children vary quite considerably, particularly in the area of language development, I must say. And I think, honestly, my answer to that is it's very difficult to express that in a podcast in a way that's not going to be quite difficult to picture and a bit boring. So I found the NHS birth to five timeline, which is actually rather good.
So if I said, you know, walking, at around what time should they be walking?
Well, most children walk at around one. But if you're a child of African origin, you tend to walk a bit earlier. If you're a child who's been a bottom shuffler, bum shoveler, I continue to call them, because it's more funny, then you may be a bit later. And that's fine.
And different children have different personalities and might want to do things at different times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have an idea, isn't it? It's nice to have an idea. About one, they'll start walking. Okay, well, I can put up the gates then. So, you know, I can define my boundaries. I can change the decor then.
Yeah,
I can hide the pens so they don't write on the wall then.
You need to train everyone who comes to your house in where to put their coffee mugs.
Around about one. And it's also about you need to train your nose to deal with a different kind of nappy when they go onto solid food. So when can I start to train my nose to go onto solid food? What time will that be, Max?
Well, I mean, that's a difficult
around
one. I
think 6 months.
About 6 months. Answers, okay, so. these are good answers. I love that. It's about 6 months. It's about a year. Okay,
yeah,
that's
varies.
Good.
With things like walking and crawling that you just touched on, I guess there are certain things that, you know, can prevent, for example, a child learning at the right time. For example, if they were to spend far too much time in a pram or a bouncer, that can hold them up a little bit, can't it?
I think that's right. And I think, you know, the one thing that I think that I do see parents, and I wish they would do a bit more of, is giving children the opportunity to explore their environments. Because if you think about it, that's all they need. They just need the opportunity to explore, to make mistakes, to get feedback on those mistakes, and then try something else. Learning is a process of trial and error for children. And if all of their learning is basically just kind of pumped into them in a kind of passive way, that isn't the best way of doing it. Mm. So they need to be trying communication, and people need to be receptive to that communication and then come back. Equally, they need to be exploring their physical environment and just making mistakes and falling over and banging their heads.
Yeah.
That's how they learn.
That's interesting.
I think that's part of the thing in Africa, isn't it? Is that actually that they are just wandering around a little bit more.
Yeah,
and they're just exploring the environment.
Oh, I think if you're thinking particularly of the African children having a motor advantage, that's probably genetic.
Genetic as well, okay.
Because that's true of people of African origin who are in the US or the UK.
Mm. Interesting.
Can I talk about development when it comes to toys a little bit more, actually? Because this thing really fascinates me, and it's turned into a massive debate in my family. Me and my wife, Chantal, are on one side of the debate, and the rest of my family are on the other side
and
of the
like
debate.
And you would like me to...
And I want you to solve this debate. And it's a debate about whether or not we should get a slide. Now, when it comes to child development, we don't want a slide in our back garden. Oh, it'll soon change, Rick. It'll soon change. You'll give them anything you want. I don't want to give them a slide, Max. I don't want to give them a slide. It'll just ruin the view from the back garden.
Well, don't then.
Thank you. We've solved that really quickly. Mum, hope you're listening.
I mean, it's your house.
Yeah.
You know, if you...
We can go to the park, can't we?
You can go to the park.
We can go to the park. You don't have to buy your kid all this stuff.
No, you don't have to have a park in your back garden.
No.
You don't have to have a library in their room. You don't have to have...
Lots of plastic toys.
You don't have to have a toy shop in your front room. You don't have to have all of that stuff. I don't, on the other hand, subscribe to the view that everything should be wooden and plain.
No.
What they want to play with is you.
Colourful.
Yeah.
And each other. And the toys are there as props.
I've just got a picture of a Norwegian Christmas in about 1908.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it doesn't have to be that far.
I'm sure they were fine.
I'm sure they were brilliant.
But they were fine because of the people.
Yeah.
It's the social interactions that they prefer.
And you know what? Most kids as well, they don't actually... People buy all these gifts, toys and everything for them. But before they're, 18 months, they only need about... You know, one toy that they can rattle and shake, don't they?
Yeah. I mean,
a couple, maybe.
Just what they need is to explore their environment. So they do need a number of different things that they can explore in their environment. They don't have to be toys. They can be bits of... they can be a stick. They can be a bowl. They can be... You know, kids have a lovely time with, you know, a bit of screwed up paper and a spoon, or, you know, that they just need, they don't, we don't want to have the idea that they just need one object and that is the object that's going to teach them everything they need to know. They just need an environment which is kind of varied enough.
My living room seems to have become a mesh of plastic, colourful rubbish. But actually, yeah, Daisy seems to just prefer just, you know, a tissue or a pillow, just anything really. She doesn't really know what the difference between a toy and not is.
Sarah, I'd actually say your living room is quite tidy. I think compared to most people who have, you know, a kid who's a few months old, I think it's actually quite tidy.
There we go.
One of the things that lots of mums ask about is tummy time.
Oh, yes, tummy time.
What do you think of tummy time?
The thing is, since we rightly and correctly stop children sleeping on their fronts in order to reduce cot death, children are just not used to being on their tummies. So again, like I last time I was on, I talked about competitive parenting. I think sometimes tummy time is a bit like competitive parenting.
Yeah.
That you can manage it because your child has got such good control
head
of their
control.
Neck that they could do tummy time.
They're not enjoying it.
They're just lying there going, this is horrible, I don't like it. Just turn them on their back again, it's fine.
And they will develop those neck skills.
They will.
Yeah.
As long as you don't strap them in their buggy all the time because you're scared of the outside world. Part of this is about just
confidence.
Letting them be them.
Max, child development and music. Should we be playing a lot of music to our kids?
If you like the music... Otherwise, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, my kids are just going to get Phil Collins and Rod Stewart.
You should never do that to them.
Right, okay. They're not getting any music.
Terrible idea.
No, I mean, there are, again, lots of, you know, people who talk about the benefits of particular music. There's this sort of persistent myth that Mozart is uniquely helpful for babies. Anything they enjoy is great. If it distracts them, calms them down, fine, why not? Good, but there's no magic properties of music, and don't ever listen to something you don't like because because it might benefit your baby. Because when they get to 4 or 5, there'll be a lot of stuff that they really like and that you hate, and they'll insist on you playing.
Mm.
So while you've got a baby who's not going to express their
enjoy
own
it, enjoy
that,
your own music,
enjoy that moment to
That's
play
brilliant.
Your own stuff.
That is brilliant.
And is there some evidence that the sounds that babies can hear in utero they recognise?
In what?
Utero means when the baby's still inside.
It's a Nirvana album.
Right.
They recognise afterwards.
I can play that.
You can play the in utero. Sorry. Off we go.
Nirvana.
In the womb.
In the womb.
In the womb is what in utero means. In You're using jargon, Dr.
I need to stop my jargon.
Gosh, Sarah. Is that something?
Again, I mean, yeah, probably. I mean, they certainly recognise the parents'
sound of
voices.
Parents' voice.
Yeah.
So that's got implications, of course, if a child becomes fostered after birth, and that may have implications for their future emotional but well-being. But for most children, yes, fine. It's an interesting finding, but it's not helpful.
Is that kind of connected
things.
To the stress of, you know, mums and dads being stressed? They can if the kid can hear. That you're stressed, they're stressed.
Possibly, but then this interaction between maternal stress and later problems for children is a really tricky one. There is a plausible explanation that perhaps things like circulating hormones, such as stress hormones, such as cortisol, may affect the children's brains. But again, we've got to be super careful for several reasons. One is the evidence is not easy to get and not that great. And also... the last thing I want to tell pregnant women is don't get stressed. It'll make your child have emotional problems.
It is, isn't it?
So
it's complicated.
What I think the solution to that is to support pregnant women adequately with decent, you know, provision for their nutrition and health, you know, employment law that doesn't make them do hard work until late in pregnancy.
Yeah, we're going to be actually talking about that in another podcast about employment law, both for maternity and paternity.
There you go.
I've heard someone say that we should be speaking 21,000 words a day to our baby. Is that true? Because obviously, as a dad to be, I don't think I know 21,000 words.
I don't think they have
Max.
To be. I don't think they have to be individual.
As a journalist,
words.
I don't think I know that
That's
many.
That's a kind of Shakespeare level of
eloquence,
isn't
and
it?
I studied Shakespearean drama.
Oh, there you go.
And I don't know that many words.
No, well. Forsooth.
Yeah. Forsooth?
Verily, you should speak as many words as you feel like. That's an arbitrary number. And it's, again, irritating that people come up with arbitrary numbers and place them as a target. It is good to have a household where people are talking a lot. You don't have to address all those words to the baby. If you're talking to their older sibling, the baby, as Sarah says, is listening. It's going to be picking it up. So yes, it's good to speak to babies, and more important to listen to babies when they start to produce stuff themselves, to listen in a way that such that you are responding to them. Responsiveness is more important than just piling words into them.
This is one of my excuses for why I go to the coffee shop so regularly with my friends on maternity leave.
You do always go to the coffee shop.
Because I think it's really important that mums should be surrounded by other mums. And actually, it's really good for the baby to have that interaction and hear you speak. And so often when mums are cooped up at home on their own, actually, it's really hard work looking after a baby for 12 hours of a day.
Absolutely.
If you can go and spend that quality time with your friends and actually be outside, it's almost like a mini theme park for a child being outside. You know, they hear all the different sounds and smells.
Yeah,
and actually, it just buys you a bit of time.
Yeah, but also clinging, you know, keeping them in too much is going to amplify what are natural fears of the outside world. So a clingy child is a child who is fearful of new things or outside things. I think you just need to keep them safe, not push them away, but when they show any interest in the outside world, just encourage
that.
It is worrying though, isn't it, for a lot of people? It's a real worry for mums, this clinginess. I know a lot of people have gotten in contact with us about this. How can people stop worrying about it?
I think you just accept that children are children, as you
and it's a developmental
saying,
milestone as
children
well.
Children are different. It's a natural process of aversion to strangers is a natural developmental milestone, and sometimes it goes on a bit longer, and sometimes it goes on a bit shorter. It's absolutely normal to have a bit of it, and the thing that locks it in is if the parent either pushes the child away and they lose that intimacy, or they amplify the child's anxiety by protecting them from the world. It's that balance.
I suppose the last question on this part of the development chapter, what are the red flags in development and what should we do if we see them?
If your child can't do something really important, if your child can't communicate, can't move, and it's causing them frustration or you frustration, that's a red flag for me. And what you should do about it, you should go to your GP or your health visitor, or, you know, talk to someone about it if you're worried. I think the worries that we have is the people who are bottling their worries up, keeping their child at home, becoming isolated, because that's, you know, that gets into a vicious cycle.
Max, it's always so reassuring to have you on. Thank you for coming on.
Crib Notes, things parents Google at 3 a.m.
Don't forget, what's discussed today is the opinions of the individuals and not the organisations they work for.
And while we hope you find this podcast helpful, remember, this is not personal medical advice. If you are concerned, do speak to a professional.